Is that you, Tony?
Yo, yo, yo.
What's going on, man? How you doing?
I'm good. If I sound like I'm out of breath, it's because I just ran 2 blocks from the bar where I was watching the Jets beating the Dolphins and filling myself up with beer and chicken wings.
Awesome. So it's gonna be a good call, is what you're saying.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, it's gonna be a lot of fun. Don't tell me you're sober. Are you sober?
I am stone cold sober, man. I wish.
Okay.
It's a shame that we're kicking this off with me not having a beer in my hand and you having a few in your system. I've been working my butt off on this launch, and then Thursday is the day, and we can't move it. And so me going out and being social is just not in the cards for the rest of this week, and then I get my life back. It's going to be amazing. Did I lose you?
So my droid, with its lovely proximity detection, thought that I took my phone away from my head and pressed the mute button when I didn't do any of those things.
Well, I'm glad that was some fun dead air. That's what this production's for. So I mean, I don't know about what you've had time to think about for tonight. I got some good thinking in ahead of time. I figured we'd like sort of kick off with like what our sort of thoughts or intentions on our little weekly date could be. So, I mean, I'll just kind of lay out what I've got, and then you can respond or throw your own stuff on the table, whatever it is. And it is sort of twofold. And I told you, you know, last week when I said we should do this, one is that you and I, given our hectic schedules, just we don't talk anymore, and that's kind of messed up because I miss you, man. I love you, man. But the other thing is the fact that, you know, there's an increasing amount of conversation, buzzword, happening around co-working buzzword, but I haven't read much, like, thoughtful, meaty stuff. So I thought that between us and sort of the things that we see and the things that we observe, we could find some of that meatier stuff and have an opportunity to talk about it together and then share that and just sort of see where things go.
Yeah, I agree. You know, when you came to me with the idea, you know, I pretty much immediately told you I was in, and you know, that was in part because, you know, primarily same as you, we don't talk very much, and you know, if we just use this as an excuse to talk once a week and catch up, and you know, I think that's worthwhile unto itself, and I know that when we have conversations. Just you and me, and without the distractions of other people or drinks or karaoke around us, we tend to have a pretty good
karaoke.
You
know, no, that's not true. Karaoke conversations are the best conversations.
Well, that's true. That's true. A little harder to record those because it's kind of noisy, though.
Uh-huh.
you know what I'm seeing also is that I think the world of co-working is rapidly approaching its next, you know, version number, so to speak. Not that I would try to number these things, but, you know, at least here in New York, the world of co-working has just exploded. You're seeing a lot more people using the word, a lot of different shapes and sizes, you know, so and some of them not using the word, but, you know, effectively having that same sort of spirit. And I think that, you know, certainly increasingly, hitting the mainstream and picking up speed. And, you know, so I think now more than ever, there's just so much to talk about. There's so much going on. And, you know, there's just that much more to think about in terms of where all this is going and the impact it's going to have on the world.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And, you know, it's interesting because there's a lot of sort of, you know, the co-working fundamental stuff that you and I built our communities and our businesses on top of, and that the many other people have modeled after, is starting to find its way into some pretty prominent discussions and circles of information online, at least, without the word co-working, which I think is really interesting. That these fundamentals that you and I have talked about, you know, it's not really about these shared workspaces that you and I run, but about this sort of change in the workplace. So I don't know, this might be, you know, if we're going to go forward and call this a podcast of some sort, this might be the first podcast about the workplace, which is going to be awesome because it's going to be about all the things at the workplace. I mean, honestly, like, the workplace is not really interesting enough to merit a podcast unless you're talking about this really, really interesting total shift in looking at what a workplace even is or means. So I think that's kind of exciting too.
Yeah, totally, totally. And I think I think you hit it right there that, you know, this isn't necessarily strictly about, you know, the word co-working and our funky little communities that we have, but really about the notion of you know, the way we think about how we work and how we live and how the two interrelate and, you know, maybe cross over with each other. You know, I sort of, you know, over the course of time started out thinking of this as being something that, you know, was just something that I needed because I worked from home and I was a telecommuter, and that turned into something that, you know, I realized was part of a bigger picture in terms of where things were going. And along the way, I started, you know, sort of became, you know, anti-cubicle and sort of, you know, anti-working for a big company. But over time, I've started to ease back on that because this isn't something that's purely going to happen. This shift isn't just going to happen in terms of people no longer working for a large corporation. Large corporations are catching on to this, and they're changing the way they think about their office and their management styles. And, you know, a lot of the smart ones have evolved already to the point where, you know, they're far more effective organizations and far more fun organizations to work for.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think you're totally right, and the companies are seeing this, and, you know, there's a bunch of elements to it that pique their interest, and a lot of it, I think, circles around, the talent, the people that work in, the people that normally have the ability to make the decision of where they want to work would measure themselves as generally unhireable, you know. So not that they're not talented, it's actually the opposite, you know. They have a different set of things that they're interested in outside of money. They have a different set of non-monetary incentives. And companies just haven't, it's not that they haven't wanted to compete, they haven't had anything to measure up against. There's been no visibility into what talent is looking for, and so they haven't had anything to mimic or to mirror. And so it's interesting to watch companies do that, to mirror it without understanding it, without going through the time of understanding it. You know, fill up an office full of beanbag chairs and you know, free food and make it kind of hip and cool, but still have this you know, the control element rather than attempt to introduce things like serendipity and a little bit of free will into the workplace. So I think it's going to be very interesting as companies sort of transition towards the center and as co-working spaces transition towards the center.
Yeah, I agree. You know, it's interesting you talk about introducing serendipity to the workplace, and I wonder if you know, if we even want to sort of just review real quick, you know, what is it that really makes this special? I mean, we've, you know, at the most basic level, okay, we got a bunch of people in the room. It's an open environment. There's no cubicles.
It's funny. I don't know about you. We talked about, you know, having a couple of things we wanted to bring to the conversation. And the one thing that came up this week that I absolutely positively wanted to see if you had a chance to watch, and if not, suggest that you know, maybe we pause this, you watch it, and then we continue. The Steven Johnson stuff about where good ideas come from, did you catch that?
Yeah, I really wanted to. I haven't watched it. It's on my list.
I get to tell you about it then.
Why don't you tell all of us about it?
Yeah, so, I mean, do you know of, like, Steven Johnson's other work? Have you read any of those stuff?
Not really. I just know a little bit about it.
Right. So I mean, the bottom line, I've enjoyed the other things that he's written. Invention of Air was the last book that I read, but bottom line is that everything else that he's written has been a good read. It's, you know, interesting sort of narrative. He's a good, readable writer, but the stuff that he tackles is really pretty phenomenal. And so this new book that's coming out, either just came out or is coming out, is called Where Good Ideas Come From, and he takes sort of a holistic and, in his words, an environmental approach to where ideas come from. And his whole core thesis is that that ideas don't happen in sort of a singular moment. There's no flash, and there's no just one time where an idea occurs. And he's got this idea of something called a slow hunch. It's sort of like a half-baked idea, right? And Lord knows we've got enough of those. We're talking on one right now. So the idea is that, or his thesis is that great ideas don't come from any one idea, but they're when two slow hunches bump into each other, and one needs the other, or in the best of cases, they need each other. And so what he sort of subscribes to then is that great ideas come from creating opportunities for lots of slow hunches to bump into each other, and at some rate of probability working in its favor, those hunches will need one another, or again, in best cases, need each other, and the greatest thing possible will emerge. And he cites historically things like the salons of Paris and the coffee shops of London as, you know, locations of, you know, historic, you know, creative renaissance, and saying that, you know, the companies, the places that are trying to create quote-unquote innovation today should be looking to those rather than prescribe innovation, create environments for half-baked ideas to bump into each other. And as I'm watching this video, which came in two formats, as an 18-minute TED Talk and a like 3 or 4 minute whiteboard sketch awesomeness thing, which I can link up to in whatever we have for show notes, I'm watching this and going, yes, for the love of God, yes, this is, he's describing the magic of what we do or don't do, for that matter, and the fact that we sort of create some context and some shared context and permission of the way that I've sort of leaned into this, describing what we have. We don't create anything remarkable in terms of an office, although, I mean, both of our offices are pretty awesome. That's not the point. The point is that you create a context for a diversity, for a diverse selection of people to bump into each other. The more diverse, the better, and that sort of fits into Stephen's thesis. And then you give them permission to bump into each other and to see what happens and watch for patterns to emerge and guide the good ones and attempt to unguide the bad ones, which I was just like, everybody needs to watch this. This is amazing.
Yeah. You know what? I actually did see the 3 or 4 minute sketch version, and I've seen a few of those where they have the high speed whiteboard photography, which is
awesome.
It's incredible, especially because they seem to pick really, really great talks to illustrate, and I'd love to buy some prints. I don't know if they sell the prints, but you know, it would be cool to get some of those up in the walls in the space.
Yeah. You know, we still have the whiteboard notes that Johnny Goldstein did from our town hall early in the summer, and everybody's like their initial reaction is, "What is that?" And before we can even answer, they go, "That's awesome." So that was just, they're the best.
Yeah, that's great stuff. And I mean, the talk really does get sort of to the root of what's going on in the space or in these kinds of environments that make them special. And that sort of gets to what I think is the direction of where these things are going. You know, we've been obviously big fans of the word co-working, but we're starting to see the elements of that concept penetrate into places where that word maybe is just never going to get used, or people aren't even going to know that the word exists, but the concepts behind it still ring true and are still emerging in other areas and in other shapes and sizes.
Right, exactly.
You know, I was just on a panel yesterday at Maker Faire, which made its debut in New York for the first time. It was a huge hit. It was really quite fun. They had all kinds of crazy stuff. They had a human-sized mousetrap. They had this group in New York called the Madagascar Institute, which is basically like a crazier version of Mythbusters, but without any myths. They just sort of take stuff together and like they blow stuff up. They had a flamethrower class, and they just they do all sorts of things that are extremely dangerous and awesome. And so they had like a merry-go-round where there were like two horses, but they were propelled by jet engines that they lit with a leaf blower, and just crazy stuff. Anyway.
Who are these people?
I don't know, but
free time. It's not fair.
Yeah, I know. You would love these guys. They have all these great signage. Like they have a T-shirt where their tagline is "You can't win with bricks." And
I watch that on a T-shirt.
And safety third. And so it was a great fair. But I was on this panel that was put on by Lisa Gansky, who has a book coming out. About what she calls the mesh, and basically the idea that we as a society are transitioning away from emphasis on ownership and towards emphasis on sharing. And she points to things like Zipcar and obviously also to things on the internet and co-working as examples of people increasingly sharing instead of owning. And so one of the questions that somebody in the audience posed was, you know, co-working is really cool, but, you know, our space is just, it's basically people who are on computers and on laptops and people who don't need a heck of a lot more than that. And he said, well, what about people who have more unique needs, you know, architects or designers or, you know, people who maybe, you know, need specific kinds of equipment, you know, and what's out there for them? And, you know, I had told him about a couple of examples I knew of, you know, hacker spaces and a couple of other things. But you know, one of the other things I said was that I thought, you know, there's room for a lot more diversification, and I think we're starting to see it, but I think there's a lot more around the corner. And he used the example of architects, and, you know, there's no reason why a bunch of architects shouldn't be able to think about, if they took a step back and just critically thought, okay, you know, what are our shared needs? How could we redo this? That they couldn't, you know, reconfigure themselves in a way that made more sense.
Well, and also, I mean, if they're going to take that big of a step back, take one step further without falling off the bench and say, who else should we be corroborating with? You know, there's other sort of neighboring industries with similar needs that will be attracted to the physical facilities that these architects are sharing. But again, we'll get back to the Stephen Johnson thesis of you need people to bump into each other, and the more different those people are, the richer the bumping into each otherness is. So, I mean, whenever somebody emails Indy Hall to ask, you know, Jeff or I about, hey, I want to open an indie hall for such and such, and actually architects happen to be one that we just got a few days ago, our typical response is something to the effect of, we don't think that's that interesting or valuable. I mean, the shared work, the shared elements of it are economically, you know, sound and useful, and it's not to say that it wouldn't work, but if you're going to go through all the trouble, why not make it interesting, and why not add a dimension of value that's far more difficult to replicate, and turn what you're offering into something that's truly unique and truly special? I don't know what that looks like for architects, though, because I'm not an architect, so you need an architect to know.
Well, yeah, you make a great point. Well, one of the nice things about this whole movement is that you don't have to be sitting next to the same kind of person every day. And you know, so you don't necessarily. And one of the other things that's great also is that you have a diversity depending on what, you know, what kind of a day you have ahead of you. You know, you could be working at home, or you could be working in, you know, a co-working space. You could be working in somebody else's place, and you know, so maybe it makes sense that you have a little bit of both. That depending on what kind of work you do, maybe some days you need to be somewhere where there's shared resources that are expensive or limited in some way, right? Like you know, certain kind of
opportunity where you don't run sort of a dedicated workspace for a given discipline, but you create sort of shared annexes for the more foundational shared communities. Does that make sense? I'm not really sure. Like a lot of this stuff seems like borderline edge case. But if you can get enough communities to border on the same border, now you've got sort of this, it's almost like where a bunch of circles of a Venn diagram overlap, there's value there, even if that's not the core energy for any of the specific circles. And that's a place for, as to, you know, you're staying in New York, you know, this is being, co-working is being used in a bunch of different ways. I think it'll be interesting to see who's observant and observant enough to sort of identify those overlaps and create shared value for the communities that are focused on sharing value. That seems like a huge opportunity and
sure.
And great place.
Yeah.
Great things happen.
And that's also at a programming and a management level that just regardless of the space or the specific community, finding those connections that haven't yet been made that are just valuable connections that need to happen. And there are a lot of groups in the city that don't know that each other exists, and if they could just know about each other, if they could just end up, you know, doing a joint event or something like that,
you've been talking a lot about where you're sort of figuring out where you fit in New York City. Now that New York City is in a pretty incredibly strong 2.0 version of the space and the organization and the management. So I'm curious if, you know, I'm hearing you say that out loud, and it kind of makes sense that you having seen that, that's sort of the direction that you might be taking things.
Well, yeah, you know, this is something that I've done a lot of thinking about. Obviously, I've been working on 2.0 for a long time now and focusing on it pretty much with every waking moment for the last few months. And one of the things that I discovered along the way is that New York obviously has a very loud, very strong tech scene. I mean startup scene. And it's a very patriotic startup scene. What's that?
Thank you for differentiating.
Yes. Well, we can have an entire podcast just about that topic. But
say that for episode two.
Yeah. And you know, one of the things that I wanted to focus on with Newark City's next iteration was to make it less strictly about New York's startup scene and strictly being about startups, and being more about this bigger picture of anybody who can choose to work anywhere, and really setting that barrier. And I want to give Amit Gupta due credit for this phrase that I basically stole from him, because he just nailed it so perfectly with Jelly, which is, you know, all you need is a laptop, some work to do, and a friendly disposition. And that really, you know, I think encompasses a much wider array of people, which is that bigger picture thing, which is people working in all sorts of different fields, or even, you know, looking to start working in different fields, not necessarily in startups, and maybe they will end up in startups. And I think that's one of the values of having a diverse co-working space, is that I've seen people who are not from the startup world, who have never heard of the New York Tech Meetup, who don't really know who Fred Wilson is, who come to the space. They don't care about the echo chamber, they don't care about Mike Arrington, they're just doing their thing because they're talented people and they love what they do. And maybe they end up getting hired by somebody who's starting a startup in the space, or starting something with somebody that they met next to them. And so they end up, you know, doing a startup, or maybe not. Maybe they end up just doing a really cool project or a small business.
Maybe somebody that's so immersed in the startup echo chamber out of that echo chamber and realize that there's really rad stuff happening outside of
even
that.
Better.
We've seen that. We've seen you know, people sort of get pulled out of their own bubble into reality, and they've got a great, great idea, and in some cases even a great product, but they're too busy thinking about it in startup terms instead of thinking about it in business terms.
Yep.
And when you've got somebody, you know, you don't know who you're sitting next to until you talk to them a little bit, and whether
yep.
you're getting technical help on something. I mean, I've seen a computer scientist sit next to, you know, a PhD musician, realize that the PhD musician on the whiteboard is solving some problem in a graph, and go, hey, what problem are you solving? Oh, there's a way,
yep.
your way to solve that. Those two people, I mean, let's compare that, the situation that happened in Indy Hall, you know, again, a computer scientist and a PhD academic. that's the kind of interaction that a university could only dream of, and universities are practically architected to prevent. So you've got this situation, and then the other side of things is, you know, that PhD musician is building this product, and he got the help of an engineer to make the product amazing, but he had no idea how to get it in front of the right people and how to sell it and how to actually work the market. And so he was sitting next to another guy that did have all that experience, and for the time that was necessary, they worked together as business partners, and when it wasn't necessary anymore, they actually decided that long-term business partnership wasn't the right thing. They rearrange shares, and now David sits as an advisor on the company. So these people are basically the expressions of agility in sort of entering, moving through, and then evolving these working relationships is truly remarkable. And with nobody telling them to do it or how to do it, they're just kind of figuring it out together.
Yeah, and that's the beauty of it right there, right? And that's something that, what you're describing there is the facilitation of things, right? Creating an environment that permits these things to happen on their own. And that's a really important element to all this, and something that I'm thinking about as we're, sort of looking to the future beyond the space that we moved into, is how do we scale our impact, and how do we help more people do more of this? And it's a tricky thing because you can't just impose it. That was something somebody else asked me on a panel yesterday, is what are you going to do next? Are you going to open more spaces? Are you going to franchise? And one of the things I described to them in having thought about this is that, you know, you can't just impose these things. I can't say that we're going to start Newark City Williamsburg and hire someone to go there and start it, because it's going to be artificial, it's not going to be genuine, and you're not going to have that same kind of natural growth. And it's an important thing to sort of keep in mind when thinking about approaching these kinds of things, is to always have it be something where you're gardening it, where you're sort of farming it, but you can't really force it.
Yeah. I mean, there was a post in the co-working Google group sometime in the last week. Someone, I think it was a community manager for Next Spaces. I don't know if it was the LA community manager or the San Francisco community manager. The fact that there's two locations and they have a person with a job title community manager makes me interested in the grounds for the question being asked. But the question was, you know, we had somebody complain about cell phone ringer noise. Does anybody else have a policy where you ask people to turn off the ringers? And my response publicly was, why don't you just talk to the members and let them create their policy? And the answer that I got back from her wasn't necessarily that's what they did. It sort of alluded to it, but the fact is that we've gone down roads so deeply where, you know, we dealt with a theft. We dealt with a pretty significant theft at any call, and it would have been very easy to go on lockdown and attempt to sort out the problem, but instead we remembered that we had gardened this community of people that cared about it as much as we did, and we posed the opportunity for them to give suggestions before we even proposed anything to them. And we let their suggestions guide our decisions, and in many cases their suggestions became what we ended up doing. So, that gardening and sort of giving up control and letting the community run itself and be there to sort of be a guiding force, but really let them do anything, so long as it sort of fits core values, is a really hard thing to do. I know we've seen value from it time and time again, though.
Yeah, I agree. So believe it or not, that is 30 minutes.
30 minutes, holy crap. Well, I just sort of want to wrap on, two things. I know we said we'd keep this 30 minutes, and we'll work towards that. I produce the whole beer show thing. We shoot for like 4 to 5 minutes, but keeping it under 6 is impossible. So if we extrapolate this, we can get another 90 seconds in. So I have two questions for you.
Okay.
One question, and then one thing that I sort of want to send you into next week's call thinking about. So question number one is, first of all, have you gotten a chance to read the Inc. article yet?
Okay. I guess I have to answer that before you leave me with your final thought.
I do.
I honestly, so I just saw, finally actually just saw the actual magazine on Friday afternoon. At the very end of the day, the author of the article, Max Chafkin, who's just the nicest guy in the world, actually stopped by and dropped off a couple of issues, and I skimmed the article.
Tuesday, right?
It started hitting mailboxes on Tuesday or Wednesday. It's not supposed to be on newsstands until this Tuesday, but it started to arrive on newsstands. Somebody said they saw it in a Barnes & Noble.
Yeah, yeah. For those listening, depending on when this thing actually gets published, Tony was on the cover of Inc. magazine. And so I'm curious, my second part of my question, since you haven't read it and you've best skimmed it, is my question was going to be, what's your favorite quote that you got in? And so you haven't read it well enough to know that. What was the quote that you gave that you hoped they would print?
Ah, that's good. That's really good. Well, you know, it's funny because whenever you're in media, and you know this as well as I do, you know, they put their own sort of spin on things, and that's sort of how the industry works. So,
sure.
You know, even the pieces that I read, there were things that I just, you know, if I were writing the article, I wouldn't write it that way, but I didn't write the article. You know, but they put their own spin on things, and I understand the way that is. And I think they very much captured the spirit of what was going on. What I think is, you know, I don't remember what exactly we said during the interview. It was several months ago, but what I always want is just to go deeper, you know, and a lot of times, especially with the media, people talk about, you know.
Sorry, I couldn't not.
What's that?
You said you wanted to go deeper, and I said that's what she said. It's not funny when you have to explain it.
And that's your show, folks. Thanks for coming. Yeah, well, you know, I mean, I just think the media, like, it's easy to talk in the media a lot about just the quick notion of sort of this is shared workspace and a bunch of freelancers getting together. And I always want to, you know, take that a level or two deeper. And, you know, like, this was a cover story, and it's a big piece. And, you know, I had, I guess, two columns on facing on opposite pages of each other, and you know, so it was a pretty good article. It was a pretty good piece. But what I'd love is to just be able to drill deeper in it. And that's actually what I'm hoping for this show, is to be able to have a long enough conversation. And maybe we can do that with just pick one or two topics and just drill away at it for a long time. And I know we're way over time here, but I was blown away once when I watched an episode of, I believe it was Charlie Rose on PBS, because
yeah,
it was just him and one other guy, some, you know, celebrity or some luminary, and it was just the two of them sitting on chairs having a conversation for an hour. And I was blown away at the end of the episode because they actually managed to have a real in-depth conversation, and I managed to, you know, actually have my brain get challenged a little bit watching TV. And it made me realize how much TV had become so ADD, how everything was, you know, 15-second sound bites. And I think especially in this culture now of you know, Twittering and text messaging and everything that we're doing, moving so fast, a good, decent, long conversation where we can actually think a little bit is becoming that much more valuable.
I couldn't agree more, which is exactly why we're going to wrap on my final thought. And actually, I want, so the last thing we just did where I asked you sort of like a deep question, I want every week, I want to do, I'm already creating segments. Do you realize what I'm doing here? This is insane. So the last segment of every week's call is going to be called Exit Interview, since we're the co-workers,
okay,
like an office parody. And every week we're going to volley, and the one person gets to ask the other person absolutely anything. And that's what the last thing that we talk about is. So So I asked you about the Inc. magazine thing, and so next week you can ask me anything, and that'll be sort of like the last 5 minutes of our conversation.
That's great. I'm going to crowdsource it, and I'm going to get everybody on Twitter to give me the question. So
lazy. All right, man. This was an awesome first call. I am super stoked about doing this every week, and I'm going to, as soon as Cauliflower spits out the MP3, I will rip it down, give it a listen, send it over to you, and we'll publish it. So if there's anything else you want to include in, like, show notes or whatever, just drop me an email.
All right. Well, that sounds great, Alex. It was great talking to you, and I'm looking forward to next week.
Likewise, dude. This is going to be a good thing, I can tell. All right, man. Have a great night and have a great week.
All right. Good night, Alex. Bye.
Peace out.